Okay, welcome. Hi, everyone. Welcome to today's session. I guess we'll get started. Today's session in medical screening, mitigating medical issues as passengers' adventures amplify. My name's Todd Duncan. I'm the program safety manager for the Sierra Club, and I'll be moderating for you today and chipping in. Can you hear me? There we go. Is it not super loud? Okay, so I'll try to talk close. So maybe we'll talk close if the speakers are sort of low, and maybe we'll help the sound here a little bit. So again, I'm Todd Duncan. I'm the program safety manager for the Sierra Club, and I'll be moderating today and then chipping in from an operational perspective. But we have a great, very experienced panel of speakers this morning with very good pertinent experiences. One of our speakers is Susan Buren, who is an emergency physician with really deep roots in wilderness medicine, outdoor adventure, mountaineering, and served for 20 years as Geographic Expeditions Physician Advisor. And we also have Lori Sherwood, who's a partner in Walsworth, a San Francisco-based law firm specializing in part in travel and tour operators. And personally, after spending the past couple days presenting with Lori, she has a really good knack of communicating otherwise complex legal and other issues into very coherent, understandable, and accessible terms. So a lot of good experience there. We'll have each speaker speak for a few minutes to outline and present medical screening and some of the general issues and topics. And we really want to make this an interactive session and make it as useful for you all as possible. And so then give you a chance for the bulk of the session to ask questions as you all need. We are being recorded today, so we're using the microphone, so we'll try to do that. So as we want to ask questions, let me know, and I can run the mic around so that we can capture everybody's input. Okay, thanks, and we'll get started. Lori.
Good morning. So very honored to be here again and have the opportunity to speak with all of you. As Todd mentioned, I'm an attorney in San Francisco at Walsworth. We are a California-based firm. Our main office is in Orange County with offices in LA and San Francisco as well. So for about the past 20 years, I have been handling, have been handling tour operator travel and related litigation. We also do advisory work. And one of the things that I think I've learned over the 20 years is we often see things from the back end once a matter's gone to litigation. And so we've learned a lot in that regard about what you need to do on the front end and how problems can be prevented and hopefully lawsuits prevented. So we always hate to see anyone in court. Granted, it keeps us in business. But there is a lot you can do on the front end to protect yourselves on the back end. So anyway, today we're going to be talking about medical screening and questionnaires. And I'd like to talk a little bit from the outset, kind of the purpose of what doing medical screening, medical questionnaires is. Overall, I think we're all starting to see an increased travel in more adventure travel. So people are going to more, I don't want to say dangerous, but maybe more risk-involved destinations. We have people going up Mount Kilimanjaro. We have people doing rugged hiking, a number of trips. And everyone, I think, a lot of us sometimes overestimate our abilities. And so we can get into situations where, had things been done on the front end, situations might have been avoided. So that's one of the issues. And another issue that we've seen come up, even just being here from all of you, is that we have an aging population that really wants to travel. And that raises some potential mobility issues and things that can come up involving trips. So anyway, the overall purpose of doing medical questionnaires, medical screenings, depending again on the type of trip, is you want to keep your travelers safe. And you want the best experience for everyone. So if we get into a situation where a traveler is having problems on a trip, they don't have the physical ability to handle a trip, that can only not only put their safety at risk, but it can also put the safety of your other travelers and also their enjoyment at risk. So those are things to think about in requiring medical questionnaires and medical screening. The other thing that also is valuable, if someone gets into a situation on a trip, it's helpful to have their medical background. If someone's hurt, someone's injured, someone has a heart attack, what medications are they on? What pre-existing conditions do they have? So that can be really important. Susan is going to talk specifically about what types of information to include on a questionnaire, why you do it, what you should be doing, and including what about medical screening, requiring physicals. And again, all of that is going to depend on kind of a case-by-case or trip-by-trip basis. So obviously, if you're just going to Disneyland, you don't need someone to go get a physical. If you have someone going up Mount Kilimanjaro, then maybe you do need somebody to have a physical or a sign-off by their doctor. So another issue that's come up kind of throughout the course of this, who collects that information? So should it be you as the planner or you as the tour operator? And I think it can depend and it can go either way. I'm hearing more and more from people that they're letting their tour operators actually get that information. So the information is going directly from the traveler to the tour operator who's handling the trip, or they're getting it to their ground handler. Other people are actually collecting that information themselves and then passing it on to their tour operator, who then may pass it on to the ground handler. I think for all of you, no matter what your position, the key is what is being done with that information. So if you're collecting it, you're not actually running the trip, and it's most important for people handling the trip to be going over that information. But if you get the information and you just stick it in a cupboard or in a drawer and don't go through it, then that's not helpful. Someone needs to be screening that information. So for example, if you have a Mount Kilimanjaro trip, you get information in, there are red flags in the information that you've received. You don't do anything with that, that's when you can be exposed to potential liability. But if you act on that information, whether it's requiring the person to get a further physical or consultation with a specialist to determine are they qualified or do they have the ability to go on that trip, then that will help to absolve you from potential liability down the road. And not always. But the key is that someone is screening that information, whether it's you or whether it's your tour operator, in determining whether a person is qualified to go on a trip. So main thing, don't just stick that information in a drawer and ignore it. And you also want to make sure that whoever is actually conducting the trip has that information in case of an emergency. If they don't have that information and something happens, and say, for example, they indicated on that report that they were allergic to penicillin, and wherever they were being treated gave them penicillin, again, potential issue. Not you necessarily, but very often, and we've seen it where even though the tour operator, the planner, or the agent forwarded the information, they had it, they sometimes still will go after the travel agent or the travel planner, or the U.S.-based company, especially if you're working with international operators. Sometimes it's very much harder to reach those individuals. what are a few other things that you can do? In terms of your questionnaires, make sure you have language in there that people are signing off, indicating that they have been truthful and accurate in disclosing the information. Then if there's a failure disclosed on their part, you can always go back to that and say, well, look, you didn't disclose that information. The responsibility goes back to you. But you do want to make sure to have that kind of information. and again, it's important to get that. We had it involved in a situation where someone was not forthcoming about their actual weight, and actually their doctor even signed off on a form, had untreated conditions that would have impacted whether that person actually went on the trip. There is personal responsibility, but you want to make sure the traveler is signing off on that they have fully disclosed. You also want to indicate in your releases and your terms and conditions that you have the right to terminate someone from a trip if a situation arises where they're putting their own health or condition at risk, or the safety of others, as well as their enjoyment. How many of you have been involved in situations where you did have to send somebody home? Okay, they tend to be, I'm sure, very complicated and difficult situations at times. But again, and I think one of the key things, as in so many things, is how you handle a situation. And I think bottom line, it has to be expressed that it's for their concern, you're concerned for them, their safety, their ability to continue on the trip, and that they're putting their own potential health and safety at risk, possibly also the safety of others. But I think sometimes it really helps to focus on their own condition. You may also want to include similar language to what you had them sign off on in your terms and conditions, you know, that they're certifying they're capable of handling a particular trip. That also goes back, and I meant to mention earlier, but I think especially with certain types of travel where there are physical requirements to the trip, it's really important, and I think we're seeing it becoming more and more important to be specific about what those physical requirements are. So if you're hiking to high altitude, be sure to include what that person's going to be required to do, so then they can't come back and say when something happens, oh, well, you never told me, you didn't disclose what the conditions were, what the terrain was, because the more you disclose, the more protection you have. I'm big on it's better to err on the side of disclosure as to keeping information, quote, secret or not disclosed. But I think physical limitations, especially as we do see more aging travelers traveling and having physical limitations, I think that's becoming more and more important. And we all think we can do anything and everything, but as we do age, we find out sometimes things aren't always quite as easy as they used to be. So again, how you handle it is critical. One other quick thing, and I would say, too, in terms of handling, if you become aware of a medical condition or something that may prevent a traveler going on a particular trip, be sure to address that as soon as possible. Don't wait to 2 days before the trip. Require that you get those forms in early enough that you have time to review them, that you have time to actually have, if you need to, have a doctor review them or a medical advisor. And if you need to address a problem, obviously always much better to do it early on. And just briefly, this is a little bit of an aside, but we get a lot of questions, well, what about the ADA? And how does that apply to travel? And do we need to accommodate someone, or are we required to allow a person to go on a trip even though they have these limitations? And generally, the ADA applies to places of public accommodation, so places such as hotels, airlines, buses. Your potential exposure, if you own or operate any of those types of entities, can come up, and you would have a duty to accommodate. If you're working, say, for example, you charter a bus, and then you're going to have a lease or an agreement with that bus company, then you may also have a duty to make sure they're accommodated. But generally speaking, entities to kind of encompass everyone, does not necessarily have a duty to accommodate and allow travelers on a particular trip. But I would just kind of caution that you're better off to try to work with a traveler, and if you can accommodate them without putting the rest of the group at risk or altering the nature of the trip, then you may want to try to work with that individual. But they also need to understand their potential limitations, and certain trips may not be appropriate, or certain trips you're handling may not be appropriate with people with certain disabilities. There are also, and just in doing some research, a number of companies that now actually do, like, I don't want to say ADA travel, but they deal on a regular basis with persons with disabilities. So they're very experienced in that type of travel, and they're also, you know, there may be some referrals there. So anyway, with that, I will go ahead and turn it over to Susan to talk more about the specifics, and then we'll look forward to answering any questions and kind of hearing about your experiences as well. Thank you.
Morning, everyone. I was going to ask for the same show of hands, and Lori's already done it. So as to who has had experience with a traveler having a problem on a medical problem on one of your trips. Could I also ask who among you are tour operators? Okay. And who are travel planners? Okay. And is anyone here from a medical evacuation company? Okay. So over the years, my experience in wilderness medicine emerged just as the field was emerging itself. I've been an emergency physician for about 30 years, but wilderness medicine didn't really develop as a formal specialty until sometime after that. So I had the opportunity to see it emerge and to do medical screening and medical evacuation when it was much less sophisticated a field as it is right now. Fortunately, medical evacuation companies have become much more available, just as travelers have become more bold, you might say, in how they want to push the boundaries of geographic boundaries, and also trying to travel with medical conditions, multiple medical conditions as well. So over the 20 years or so at GOX, we would end up having about 50 or 60 incidents a year, including, unfortunately, three fatalities. So I'd say that those incidents still remain some of the more poignant and unforgettable experiences for me as a doc, even including experiences in the emergency department. So I would say that you probably also could share that you might share, having experienced, the toll it takes on your organization to have an episode where someone may have had a serious medical incident, the work it takes to get them back, and also some of you probably had fatalities occur. Has anybody had a fatality on one of their trips? Okay. So you know that the toll it takes not certainly on the patient, on their families, but on yourself and your staff. So with that, I wanted to just add a little bit to what Lori was saying about medical screening. Given that you're all from a variety of organizations of different sizes, and the person on the phone with a prospective new traveler may or may not have a medical background, probably not, but they probably have a pretty good understanding of the itinerary themselves, but maybe not. But the very basic question that they should be asking, or on your medical questionnaire, is have you had a medical issue in X period of time? And that period of time depends on, I would say, your risk acceptance or your risk tolerance for an organization. The medical evacuation companies are saying about 45 days. If someone acknowledges a medical condition within 45 days of the time of their trip, and that issue becomes the reason for an evacuation on the trip, that would not be covered under the policy. For an organization that's planning travel, you might want to have a longer time frame. If somebody's just had a heart attack, 3 months ago and they want to climb Mount Kilimanjaro, you probably want to catch that in your screening. But to make those sort of medical judgments is really unfair and probably fraught with pitfalls to have someone who's trying to do the trip planning evaluate that information. So the very first question would be, have you had anything happen within X period of time? And if it's in a year, I think would be reasonable. If the answer is yes, then they should fill out a medical question, questionnaire, and probably that information should go, depending on the itinerary, to review by either someone in your organization or to the to that person's physician, where they can match up the itinerary with the medical issues of that patient and decide if they match, because there are all kinds of factors, as you know. There's altitude, there's dust, there's travel, time zones, there's epidemiology. All of those things come into play. And it's really impossible, I think, to try to match those up with medical conditions unless you've had a medical background. So if you possibly can have someone within your organization, if your organization is large and you're having many, many people come through, as Sierra Club does, have someone within your organization review those things. But if not, very simply, you could refer that patient back to their physician for a medical certificate and a sign-off, or not. And perhaps within your organization, if you have great numbers of people, have a physician or a nurse practitioner do that role. So there are templates for medical screening. They're very, very similar. They ask for chronic conditions, any hospitalizations, including mental health hospitalizations, surgeries, heart disease, lung disease, kidney or liver problems, chronic diseases, any experience with altitude illness, diabetes, and medications. Those general categories would catch almost everything that could come up on a trip. And then for the physician section, as Lori was saying, you want to have the physician sign off on their opinion about whether that patient is healthy enough for a specific itinerary, and include the altitude on the itinerary, and also make sure that they know, because many physicians have not traveled. They have no idea what it's like to actually be in a remote destination and try to get medical care in the developing world in particular. And let them know that advanced Western-style medical care may be at least hours away, if not days away. And in light of that, do they still feel comfortable, or do they have any reservations about that particular patient? Traveler going on that itinerary. So evacuation companies also have an extra level of screening for people who are older, over age 75. And I think we'll take some, we'll need to talk about some cases. But I would also just add that we're not going to catch everyone. It's certainly true that when I also think about the people who we did evacuate, could medical screening have caught them? Actually, probably not most of the time, because we did really, really extensive screening. On the other hand, we did have some fortunate outcomes where people were advised to see their physician because they had risk factors for heart disease, but they'd never had a heart problem that they knew of. We asked them to see their cardiologist, their doc, before they went on the trip, and six of them over 20 years ended up with open heart surgery because of that. So better to catch it early, of course. So I'd like to take some questions from you about your specific cases. I think one where we might start is just with those that are most probably the cases that brought you to this talk. What is it that lingers in how a case was managed? Anyone like to go ahead?
Yeah. And can you, as you do it, can you just mention who you are and who you represent, please?
Todd Nielsen with AO Study Tours. Just quickly, no one's addressed the issue of mental disabilities and how you screen for those, which are clearly up, that people are discombobulated, they don't know where they are, they don't have their keys, they don't meet with the group on time. How do you screen for that?
Very good question. One of the phrases that I think should be added onto a medical certificate is, have you had any hospitalizations or mental health hospitalizations? And just ask right out whether they have. Unfortunately, you won't catch everyone because it's a culturally sensitive issue in our culture. People talk about their diabetes and their imbalance of their thyroid without any problem, but it's culturally sensitive to talk about an imbalance of neurotransmitters, so which are the cause of mental illness. These folks, we all inherit something. We all have an imbalance of some sort. Some people have the misfortune to have an enormous imbalance and are struggling. I'm always also interested that people who have an emotional issue choose travel as a way to help address that. Almost like an old-fashioned rest cure in the last century. But as far as screening for everyone, we probably won't get them all. I think what is very, very important is that you have someone in your organization who, or if the physician will come, be truthful in looking at what medications they may be on. And that's something that the trip planner may feel uncomfortable asking a traveler, but if they have any conditions at all, you can ask them for a medical questionnaire, send that to the doc, and catch folks that way. And I don't mean to be disrespectful at all about folks who have severe mental health issues. Many people are on medication. They are well treated by their docs. They absolutely can travel, and you will see them at their best. Unfortunately, travel and change in time zones and things like that can uncover mental health issues. Unfortunately, we had one issue at GOX where a wonderful, brilliant young man who had bipolar disorder was going to the Galapagos with his family, got gastroenteritis, vomiting and diarrhea in Cusco, in Quito, thank you, and wasn't able to take his medications. So by the time he got on the ship, he was fully symptomatic, not sleeping, knocking on travelers' doors in the middle of the night, becoming grandiose in a good way. He wanted to save the world and went off on that line. The captain had to remove him from the ship on Santa Cruz Island, and it took 22 days to get him repatriated to the United States. He would not take medication. We had to involve the State Department. We finally involved a local American expat there who worked tirelessly for 3 weeks to get him back, to gain his cooperation, to get him medically stable enough to fly back to the U.S. It's just very difficult. So as far as significant medical illness, you might catch it on a medical screening form. If someone's behavior on a trip is a problem, you need to ask your trip leaders to let you know about that. And it is okay to keep a record of that in your files. It impacts other people on the trip. Even it impacts the guides, and it might even become a safety issue if someone has a substance issue or mental health issue that is not compatible with the trip. You're going to be improvising on the trip with what to do with that person. We've had to remove people from trips while they were still there and find them a different way home. But it is okay for future reference to keep them, keep a list of those folks for the future.
A little bit on that too, and I think Susan made a great point about keeping a record. So if you do have someone that has an issue on a trip, and maybe they're not sent home on that trip, but then they want to sign up for another trip, you can go back in and see that reference. We've worked with clients where they call and say, you know, we had X, Y, or, you know, person A went on a trip. We had some serious issues. We really would prefer not to have them go on another trip. So, again, the handling of that, if they try to sign up for another trip, is trying to discourage them from going. Essentially, you do have the right to refuse to allow someone to go on a trip. And I know it puts you in a difficult position, and it's hard to do. But if you really have concerns for their safety as well as the safety of your other travelers, then that's something you want to look at. Also, we've seen, too, sometimes you may, and again, it can cross the line, you have to be careful, but if it's, say, for example, an older traveler, you may have contact information for other family members, and you may have spoken with them before related to a prior trip, and so you may want to contact them and try to work with them as well.
Into my second question, which is in terms of security of like credit card information, the security, the liability we have for keeping these medical records, how much protection do we have to do on those documents? They go in a safe?
You know, and you know what, I had that on my outline to talk about, so thank you for bringing that up, and I had kind of skipped over that. So that raises a few issues. Number one, who has access to the medical questionnaires and the medical information? It really needs to, number one, be on a as-needs-to-know basis. So most likely not everyone in your organization should have access to that. It is private information. It is confidential information. Which reminds me of one other thing you may want to have on your forms, too, or in your terms and conditions. If you are getting a screening questionnaire, that person signing off on it authorizes the release to that information of medical providers or other people that would need to know in an emergency situation, so then someone's not coming back and saying, well, you disclosed my private confidential information. First of all, you want to keep it on as a needs-to-know basis. You want to keep those documents secure depending on how that information is coming in. We did talk yesterday, we actually did a session on cybersecurity and cyber liability, and it's obviously becoming a bigger and bigger issue, and we've all seen the data breaches that have happened with any number of companies, universities, whoever it might be. So again, you want to provide the protection for that information. I think, and it's probably coming in both via fax and email, depending on how you're having your travelers fill out those questionnaires, if you're using them. Encryption is a possibility, trying to keep that information encrypted. I have to admit, I'm not an IT person. We're hoping to be back next year and do that same presentation, but with an IT person and an insurance person to talk about those issues as well. And we'll continue to obviously monitor the case law and how that's coming down. But I think just trying to maintain people's privacy is important, and only providing that information to people that need to know. Hopefully that answers your question.
I'm concerned about having an encrypted medical form with the trip manager. And they have an emergency, and now, how do I get access to this data that they're...
Yeah. You know what? Again, I think the key there, and maybe it doesn't need to be encrypted, but letting them know and having them sign off that they understand that this information will be disclosed to the trip leader, will be disclosed, and will need to be disclosed to a physician or a hospital in the case of a medical emergency, so that they know that information will be disclosed. I don't think necessarily that travel agents are probably the primary target, although there has been some hacking, but a lot of times what they're after is credit card information and that type of thing, because they're looking for financial gain. Usually in the medical information, even though it's private, I don't think it'll be a primary target of hackers. But again, you want to just do your best to protect it.
I was going to add on the front end for the screening part. For larger organizations, if you had the means, there are psychiatrists who do corporate consultation. They can meet with your staff with just a description of with a talk about mental health issues, addiction issues, cognitive decline issues for our older travelers, to learn how to guide a conversation, and even just how to pick up from clues that they might get from initially talking to someone about whether something may be going on that needs further review. And I think that also when it comes time to have a conversation with the traveler to let them know that they are not going to be allowed to go on a trip, that's a very tough conversation to have. And it should not be, in my opinion, someone who is on the front lines necessarily with travel planning. It should be someone who in leadership in your organization or the physician who saw that patient, traveler, because the rationale for saying no should be clearly and compassionately delivered. And in what, in my experience, happened is that very few people are absolutely upset, because on some level they may know that the itinerary was more than they probably should do. They may be very appreciative, especially if something is uncovered on their medical exam they didn't know about. But you also have an opportunity, if there's someone in leadership who really knows all of your itineraries, to guide them to a different one that would be a good match.
And I'd actually add on to that, from someone who manages the operational risk and just from a practical perspective, from what Susan was talking about, which is have a plan in place, right? So those conversations of removing somebody from a trip are difficult. There is no formula. It is case by case, because everybody is different, because everybody's needs are different, and because the context of the issues that are happening on that particular trip and that environment with the dynamic of that group are so specifically unique. Have a plan in place when you're trying to invent the wheel and figure out who that is during that event. That makes it all that much harder, and then you're actually not serving that person's needs pretty very well, because hopefully by removing them for the trip, you're doing it for their benefit, right, as well as the groups potentially and that sort of thing. So try to figure out whose roles and you know, the responsibilities of who has those roles ahead of time. The other thing I'd like to mention is, too, and from someone who reviews and manages a lot of the incidents that come through our programs, one of the things I tend to see with managing that midstream removal of a participant or acute medical, evaluating acute medical issues that either were picked up through screening or were not, is that it's very easy to get to have blinders and get so focused in on that one participant and that one issue that it starts exacerbating. It starts sort of undermining the program or the itinerary and the care for the rest of the group. And then if it gets drilled down too much, it can also sort of start exacerbating, start creating its own risk for other incidents and making that worse and snowballing a little bit. So again, having a plan in place, knowing your all staff's roles and how to manage that well, so that making what are almost always difficult situations as easy as they can be.
Agreed. And I'm always impressed by the background, the emotional background that people have when they imagine going on a trip or imagine going somewhere. It's very, very powerful. It could be very personal, and at the same time, they may not really pay attention to other more practical considerations, like, am I healthy enough to do this? And they also may not have been outside the United States or to the developing world. They really don't know what it feels like to be out from under the umbrella of a 911 system. Really can't imagine not having medical care of Western style less hours away for most places in the U.S. So, does anyone else have an example that they would question. Like to talk about?
I'm Lisa from the Santa Barbara Museum of Art. Should we have our hosts or institution tour managers go, or should we have them list specific examples? I think, you know, if the safety of a traveler is at risk or safety of others are at risk, sometimes it's more tangible. But we've had a couple of situations where it's really in that gray area. And do we, you know, and if we remove that person from a trip, it might go to a court case. So like if Lori, if you were hired to, you know, if we were sued for removing someone, does it help you to have very specific examples as to why we removed that person from the trip?
Is this after the trip is already?
Yeah, I guess so.
Already in place, they're already there.
Or they put a deposit down and we're asking them to not go on the trip and they're upset about that and whether or not we retain their deposit. But yes, and they're coming to us and saying, I should not be removed from this trip.
Yeah, I think, again, a lot of those situations go back to how you handle it. So the last example you gave, so if you've got a deposit and you make a determination that someone shouldn't go on a trip and you get them convinced and agreed to, you're probably better off to refund whatever that $500 or $1,000, whatever it might be, to refund it up front. Yeah, it's a hit in your pocket, but the time that potentially could be involved in litigation if it went there, not only financially, but also your time, energy, it's not a fun experience. You know, we try to make it as painless as possible, but it's not fun to go through. So very often it's better up front to try to deal with it, try to appease the person. And again, you have to do it on a case-by-case basis. Now, I think removing somebody from a trip sometimes can be a little bit more difficult. And again, that's why it's important to have language in your terms and conditions, your releases, about reserving the right to remove someone from a trip. And if you do remove someone from a trip, what the ramifications are, that they're not entitled to a refund for the remainder of the trip. And again, you know, in hindsight, and depending on the person in the situation, you may try to want to work something out with them, again, to avoid litigation. I have not seen cases nor handled cases, and I could, and I'm glad to do a little more digging, but we certainly have not handled cases where someone was taken off of a trip and ever filed a lawsuit. I don't know, has anyone been involved in any litigation in that kind of situation? Yeah, I mean, okay. So someone was thrown off a trip and then sued?
Right.
Without disclosing any private details, what was the outcome or what was the claim?
This is Tony from the Sierra Club. The claim was that you removed me from the trip and I didn't deserve to be removed, having a mental breakdown situation. And she demanded a refund and then she sued for her airfare and small claims court later on and such. But it was kind of a situation.
I think in that situation, make sure your trip leaders document what occurred, especially going into small claims court. And as attorneys, we can't appear in small claims court, but we very often help prepare clients and prepare documents for them to submit to small claims court. And the key there is having documentation. So make sure your trip leaders, if they are going to throw someone off a trip, remove, I guess would be a better term. But yeah, you're out of here. The kind of the cane pulling you across. But make sure they document what happened, what occurred, what discussions they had, because then you can go into court with those trip notes and say, you know, here's what occurred, here's what happened, here's what we did, here's who we contacted, and that at least will be helpful in defending yourself.
I would add, in terms of documenting that particular case, to get briefed testimonials from other participants. That really backs it up, because they're actually qualifying the trip manager or lecturers or both of their judgment, but now you have four or five participants saying the person was wacko, we completely agree, and it made it a great difference that that you removed them.
That's an excellent point, thank you. That never hurts. And you can always, if need be, go up, you know, follow up with those travelers after the fact, but probably better to do it simultaneously, because then you're not interfering with their lives again and that type of thing.
I think, as I think back, I'm remembering how deferential the tour guides have been sometimes in these situations, patient to a fault with people who were difficult. And it's partly cultural, I think. I mean, they're wonderful individuals. For the most part, culturally, they're can be that way. And they might just assume that aberrant behavior is just, this is a crazy American, and I have to put up with it. But I think that it's better for the traveler, for everyone else on the trip, if you have the opportunity ahead of time to just introduce the idea to a tour guide, if you're speaking with them individually, that there are times when people get on a trip who shouldn't be there, and we need to know if their behavior is difficult, and find it early, particularly with substance abuse. If you find someone who is drinking too much at night, other people on the trip notice late at night the comments are becoming more and more inappropriate. That person's not on time for the tour the next morning. That needs to come to the attention of the next higher level of leadership in the group, maybe even a call back to you from the trip leader saying, this is what's going on. What do we do? We have had a good result a few times by having a phone conversation with that traveler when the trip was still going on, saying, we need to ask you to cut back on your alcohol consumption. Be very frank. And it's better, it's much easier if you have a physician talk with that person. And they want to stay on the trip, most of them. And it was very effective. So that's another opportunity that you have. I think for the most part, you probably won't pick up substance issues ahead of time. People are not going to volunteer that they sometimes slip and go on binges. And yet they may be very, they may have the financial means to go on a trip. So you have to be, just encourage your trip leaders to let you know what's going on early on.
Any other questions? Yeah, Andrew.
Hi, Andrew Lockwood with Pacific Islands Institute. We're a tour operator. Just a follow-up question. Can you clarify why it would be better to have a doctor follow up with somebody who's drinking too much? If I understood what you just said correctly.
Oh, this is somebody who's on the trip?
Yes.
Somebody who's on the trip? Well, if there's someone in your organization who feels comfortable having that conversation, absolutely. That's absolutely okay. I think that because I had the role within GOX, the calls would come to me. So you're absolutely right. It doesn't have to be a doc. But
okay,
it should be, I don't think it should fall to the one of the staffers. I think it's a tough conversation to have. And again, the rationale for it needs to be conveyed clearly and very diplomatically to be effective. So it can be whoever can do that, I think it can work.
We have a few minutes left. Anybody else have anything to add or contribute or another question? Yeah, Todd.
I found it very beneficial to add that this is on softer adventures. This isn't climbing Kilimanjaro or going up the Khyber Pass or something. This is a simpler thing, but you have to walk. To say that if you have any walking problems, you should not join the program, or you must bring a companion who will aid you at all times, so that it's not the responsibility of the trip manager or the lecturer or other participants to do that. I think it's also good because often you're saying this in very small type in the terms and conditions that you could be removed, that on your medical form, just before they sign off, they are agreeing that they can be asked to not go on certain excursions, or they can be removed, and the expense is at their cost, and they have. And now it's in big type. It's not the little legalese stuff in the terms and conditions.
Hopefully, if you have an itinerary that requires a lot of walking, and someone in that very initial question that the intake staff would ask them, do you have any medical conditions? Say, oh, well, yeah, I had a hip replacement. My other hip's still bothering me a little bit, but I'm up and around, and my new hip is great. And they want to go to the Galapagos on and off of ships into the zodiacs. That there's often lots of staff to help in that scenario to get people in and out of boats, but hopefully you would pick that up on a medical certificate so the physician who knows that person the best, and that's not to say that the screener wouldn't actually be a nurse practitioner or someone who knows that patient well, who would make the decision. And in the medical certificate, there should be the question with as many specifics as you can, do you think that this patient can manage this specific itinerary, walking up to this number of miles a day over rough terrain or not, altitude or not, unassisted?
I'd second that too. We hear a lot about these, you know, physician sign-offs and stuff, and I think for years we weren't getting specific on what they were signing off on. Is the physician really understanding what that patient is proposing to do? And I mean, it sounds so simple, but it's way true. So
absolutely,
the more you can be specific about that, you want to go on a trip? Yeah, sure. But what are you going to be doing on there so they can make a real informed decision about that? It's a very simple thing, but it's very useful.
Very, very, very true. And physicians have different risk tolerance themselves. I remember talking to a doc who's a family physician or internist of a traveler who, and I was asking them about the cardiac history of this traveler who wanted to go on a pretty rigorous itinerary. And he said, well, I wouldn't want to go on this. If you want to take risks, just go to the casino. So he really couldn't imagine going on a trip like this. And it's difficult to clear someone or not. So I think you also have to use your own internal organizational experience with what the trips are like. And if something doesn't sound right to you, even if the physician thinks it's okay, it is okay to go back and ask that doc questions. Again, are you sure? Or you can ask that a specialist consultation be done. If this person has risk factors for heart disease, if they tell you they're slowing down, they're a little short of breath walking upstairs, and they want to climb Mount Kilimanjaro, then, of course, they should see a cardiologist before they go on a trip like that.
Right. I think we're there. I think we're at the hour. But thanks for all your all's participation and questions, and thanks for Susan and Lori. Appreciate it.